Well, good morning. Well, Mike, you gave me permission to go for 2 hours, I guess. You set it up, so here we go.
Go for it.
No, I definitely would not be doing that. I don't think that would be kind to anybody, including myself. So good to see everybody this morning that you're here, especially to our visitors and to some old returning faces that it's been a long time since we've seen. We're so very thankful for everybody's presence here. It truly is a special day because it's the Lord's Day. It's a time to come together to be His family, to remember, to praise, and to study. So it'll do you good to start out in Matthew chapter 16. We'll be reading and referencing from there, and we'll be spending a whole lot of time throughout the book of Luke as we're hopping around and looking at this question of who am I to Jesus? Who am I to Jesus? A few weeks ago, we looked at this text in Matthew chapter 16, verses 13 through 16, when the question Jesus asked them is, who do people say that I am? And this is the opposite side of this. Jesus has been asking the apostles, or the disciples at that time, who do men say I am? But on the flip side of this, Jesus is also kind of calling them out saying, who are you to me? It's just this adverse, this opposite side of it. So that's where I like to look and walk through today. Because he reads there in Matthew 16, starting in verse 13. When Jesus came to the area of Caesarea Philippi, he asked the disciples, who do people say that the Son of Man is? They answered, some say John the Baptist, some Elijah, some say others say Jeremiah, some one of the other prophets. And he said to them, but who do you say that I am? And Simon answered, saying, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And in this, you kind of really see this breakdown of where I'm going with this morning as we look through these relationship categories of this fan, friend, and family. In this, he asks, who does the public say I am? And the response he gets back is these kind of fan-based answers where they really don't understand who he is. Some say John the Baptist, some Elijah, some Jeremiah, or one of the other prophets. The people that are following along really don't know who he is or have the full picture of who he is. If you wanted to refer to this maybe in the sports terms, he's the fair-weathered fans. They're the ones who are along for the ride while the going is good. They're hanging on because it's positive, it's enjoyable to walk through right now. I mean, Jesus has been feeding them, performing miracles for them all around the nation, healing, doing all sorts of wonderful and powerful things. It's a good time to be a fan of Jesus. But to those who maybe will go a little bit further and be a devoted fan or a disciple, they would probably take offense if I referred to them as a fair-weathered fan. I'll say this, if I referred to Trish as a fair-weathered Rangers fan, I'm sure I would get a lot of scorn and good talking to afterwards from her. Because that's not who she is when it comes to her love of baseball and the Texas Rangers. Or if you were to sit down and listen to a conversation between my father-in-law and I about Godzilla, you would hear and see we are devoted fans to Godzilla and to the fun things that go with that. We have fun in knowing and learning the things that come out of being devoted. With a fair-weathered fan, in fact, a great example of a fair-weathered fan is seen in Luke chapter 18. Look over at Luke chapter 18 and verses 18 through 24. Luke 18, verses 18 through 24. It should be familiar to us. It's the rich young ruler. As he comes in and asks Jesus, good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus said to him, why do you call me good? No one is good except God alone. And you know the commandments. Do not commit adultery. Do not murder. Do not steal. Do not give false testimony. Honor your father and mother. And the man replied with, I have wholeheartedly obeyed all of these laws since my youth. And when Jesus heard this, he said to them, you lack one thing still. Sell all you have and give the money to the poor and you will have a treasure in heaven. Then come and follow me. But when the man heard this, he became very sad for he was exceedingly wealthy. And if you go over to Mark's account in Mark 10 verse 22, it says he walked away very sorrowful because he had so many riches. This is a great example of the fair-weathered fan coming to Jesus expecting all of the you know, the praise and adoration for doing what it seems to be the proper and right things to do. He was following along since he was a youth of not, you know, not committing adultery, not murdering, not stealing, not giving false testimony, honoring your mother and father. I mean, of a lot of those things, I think it's not too terribly hard to have fallen through with those according to what the law said. Kudos to him if he really did give this wholehearted example of honoring your mother and father, because I know I struggled with that when I was a young person. But this is the definition of the fair-weathered friend, because when Jesus gives him the second level or the higher level of testimony of saying how you're going to need to live your life, is selling off all these things and really focusing on me, becoming more of a devoted disciple, really getting to know me as a friend, as family, he walks away because that's not the message he wanted to hear. But you see, someone who's devoted, you can really define the idea of devoted other than a disciple with knowing the deep facts. You know their favorites, their kind of favorite things. They follow and go along even when things are not the best. If you're a devoted fan, that's the kind of individual you are. You know things beyond just their birth date and their home, their hometown. You know their likes, their dislikes, maybe their favorite color. You were a fan since the very beginning, starting out from their roots, loving them the whole time. And you really see that in the 72. Look over at Luke chapter 10. Luke 10 is starting in verse 1. He says, After this, the Lord appointed 72 others and sent them on ahead of him, two by two, into every town and a place he himself was about to go. It's not just the 12. There's the 72. There's a larger group of these disciples who seem to be devoted to him, who the Lord is sending out on the journey to teach the good news, to teach the world in a very limited scope, of course. They're not to go anywhere outside of Judea, outside of the Jews. This is a very limited scope of where they're supposed to go. But you see the response that comes out of this, starting in verse 17. Because the 72 returned with joy, saying, Lord, even the demons submitted to us in your name. So he said to them, I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. Look, I have given you authority to tread on snakes and scorpions and on the full force of the enemy, and nothing will hurt you. Nevertheless, do not rejoice that the Spirit submitted to you, but rejoice that your names stand written in heaven. These individuals knew the word. They knew the message Jesus was teaching. They went out and taught it, and they came back joyfully because they were able to see the fruits of this message, the fruits of their labor. They were able to go out and cast out demons and do other or miraculous things because they spent time knowing Jesus and knowing the words, becoming these closer and deeper level disciples, more devoted to him. But then again, there's this another category that comes into this relationship. Those are friends. And when we think of friends, well, at least when I think of friends, I think of confidants. I think of those who rely upon me, who I can rely upon. And a lot of times, people who help keep me in check. Who call me out when I'm doing something wrong, or when I need to change how my attitude is on something. They'll pull me aside, and in love, they'll tell me, hey, check yourself. Think about what you're doing, what you're saying. It's all done out of love, not out of spite, not out of arrogance. And then there's this more deeper, intimate level of family. If I'm going to have this relationship with somebody in a family idea, these are those who you're going to know most intimately. They're going to be the closest to you. They're really going to know your inner dreams, your thoughts. They can predict your actions, how you're going to say things. They know you. And look how Jesus defines family to him in Mark chapter 3. Mark chapter 3 and verses 31 through 35. Mark chapter 3. Mark chapter 3 and verse 31. Then Jesus' mother and his brothers came, Standing outside, they sent word to him to summon him. A crowd was sitting around him, and they said to him, "Look, your mother and your brothers are outside looking for you." And he answered them and said, Who are my mother and my brothers?" And looking at those who were sitting around him in the circle, he said, Here are my mother and brothers. For whoever does the will of God is my brother and sister and mother." Jesus gives this definition of family for us here, of how he refers to it means a spiritual family. Yes, he had a literal mother and father and brothers and probably sisters. And they came to seek him to call him back home. And becoming questioned, "Jesus, what are you doing? What are the teachings you're bringing? This is all so strange. It's not who you were growing up necessarily. What is happening here?" But he calls and says, No. Those who are my family, who I'm considering my brother, sister, and mother, those who know me the deepest and know what I'm doing and where I'm going to be, they are sitting around here with me. They know me intimately. They know me deeply. This is the level we're trying to achieve. And this is the level that I hope we'll get to and we'll talk about later. But I really do want to look at a great one-person example. Someone who walks through all of these things in his time with Jesus. And we'll begin with looking at Peter. Peter, as he starts out as a fan and going through all these different levels. And even ending up for a period of time somewhere we didn't talk about initially in these relationship categories. But turn over to Luke chapter 5. Luke chapter 5. As he begins here as kind of a fan, starting out in the very beginning of his time with Jesus. He starts out in Luke chapter 5, verses 1 through 11. Luke 5, verses 1 through 11. "On Jesus was standing by the lake, and the crowd was pressing around him to hear the word of God. And he saw two boats by the lake, and the fishermen had gotten out of them and were washing their nets. And he got into one of the boats, which was Simon's, and asked him to put out a little ways from the shore. And Jesus sat down and taught the crowds from the boat. And when he finished speaking, he said to Simon, 'Put out in the deep water and lower your nets for the catch.' And Simon answered, 'Master, we've worked hard all night and caught nothing. But at your word, I will lower the nets.' And when they had done this, they caught so many fish, their nets began to tear. So they motioned to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats, so that they were about to sink. And when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, 'Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man.' For Peter and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of fish that had been taken. And so were James and John, Zebedee's sons, who were Simon's business partners. And Jesus said to Simon, 'Do not be afraid. From now on, you will be catching people.' And when they brought their boats to shore, they left everything and followed him." In this short text, you do see this quick progression of Peter from fair-weathered fan to a devoted fan, to a beginning of his discipleship. The fair-weatheredness begins actually back in chapter 4 and verses 38 and 39 as Jesus goes into Simon's house and he heals his mother-in-law who is sick. That's one of the reasons why in chapter 5 he can identify Simon and can see his boat and knows. And I think why Simon comes in verse 5 and says, "But at your word, I will lower the nets." He trusted Jesus. He has an understanding of Jesus. But he doesn't know him yet. He doesn't know him deeply. He's maybe heard him speak a few times. But by the end of this very short and quick encounter, he becomes this devoted fan, a devoted disciple of Jesus, because he leaves everything. Leaves the business, leaves his mother-in-law, leaves his wife, leaves his father, leaves them all behind to follow him. That is a devoted fan. Again, put it into the baseball terms. You have the season tickets for the entire season, and you go and you travel around, going to every stadium, going to every game. That is a devoted fan. And that's Peter's doing right now. He's leaving it all behind. He's going to go and travel with Jesus for who knows how long. Jesus doesn't give him a timeline here. Doesn't say, oh, for 3 years you'll follow me. He leaves it all and goes and walks with him. Talk about a good and devoted disciple. Well, as he continues on and the relationships begin to delve deeper and deeper, we know that he is picked among the 12, sent out among the 72, and he gets closer and closer to Jesus to where he feels at some point in his life and in his work and walk that, well, what did I define friendship as for me? Be able to call someone out to the carpet, trying to keep people in line, keep them in check. Oh, good old Peter, in his infinite wisdom and maybe deeper level of friendship with the Lord. In Mark chapter 8, does this kind of similar and same thing. Mark 8, in verses 31 and 32. This is right after Mark's account of what we read previously in Matthew chapter 16. When Jesus asks, who do men say I am? Peter gives him that strong answer, you are the Christ. And then Jesus began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, chief priests, and experts in law, and be killed. And then after 3 days, he will rise again. Now, I wonder if he was so plain in his explanation of this that it literally read that, or if this is Mark's interpretation of what is said for our sake. But you see, Peter, and his level of friendship, how he's close enough, he thinks, to Christ. So Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. I mean, that's to me what a good friend would do, is come in and say, hold on, check what you're saying. This can't be right. It can't be true. Jesus, how could you be rejected? You're teaching the truth. You're clearing. You're so clear with your explanation of what the law actually meant, breaking down the rigid traditions that the Sadducees and Pharisees had set up. You're doing amazing and great work for this nation. You're on track, Jesus, to become king, if you so wanted it. Why are you telling us that you're going to be rejected and you must die? Stop it. Stop saying those things. And I think, honestly, a good friend would say those kind of things. But this is where you see the friendship kind of begin to overlap the understanding and maybe even the true nature of disciple. As he just doesn't get it. And Jesus kind of reprimands him back. He rebukes the rebuke here in verse 33. By turning, he looked at his disciples. And he rebuked Peter and said, get behind me, Satan. You are not setting your mind on God's interests, but on man's. That's not the answer I think Peter was expecting to get from his friend Jesus. I would have thought he maybe expected the great admiration of, you're right, I shouldn't have said those things. Thank you, Peter, for explaining this better to me. But Jesus rebukes the rebuke, trying to set his friend back in line of where he needed to be. And we know the continuing story of Peter's journey, how he continues to rise and become this amazing disciple of his, a true and close confidant. He's one of the three that's picked to go up and see the transfiguration of Jesus, how he's picked to witness specific miracles, how he's chosen to spend time in the garden in Jesus' final few hours with the disciples. It's Peter, James, and John as they get to go and spend this intimate time with Jesus. And we know Peter's failings as he denies Christ. At the last true moment of when friends should not have abandoned, when friends should have stood by, how his knees became weak and he fled. But you see how the family shows up. Oh, sorry, I forgot my notes got out over here. You see it before then, the enemy. As I said, I was walking through the denial part. As he comes and he denies Jesus in Luke chapter 22. He rebukes the rebuke there, Jesus did in Mark chapter 8, and then Peter denies and falls, becoming this unfortunate end of category we didn't bring up in the first part, of enemy, of how friend became this enemy and ran and hid and fled. Luke 22, in Luke chapter 22 and verse 31 through 34. Luke 22 and verse 31. Jesus tells him, Simon, Simon, pay attention. Satan has demanded to have you all sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. When you've turned back, strengthen your brothers. And Peter said to him, Lord, I'm ready to go with you both to prison and to death. You see the friend level right there, the devoted disciple, not a fair-weathered fan anymore, but this devoted disciple, this deep friend, intimate friend, I am ready to go with you to prison and death. And Jesus replies, Peter, the rooster will not crow today until you've denied me three times. What a blow that must have been to the friendship. No, that can't be the case. Not at all. How many's been reeling from that idea? And then you see it, of course, happen in verses 54 through 62, where Peter at a distance follows along to watch the trial, and he sits around the fire. And the servant girl comes and says, well, this man, you were with him too. And he denies it, saying, woman, I do not know him. And a little later, someone else saw him and says, you were one of them too. And Peter said, man, I am not. And after about an hour, another insisted, certainly this man is with him because he too is a Galilean. He walks the walk. He talks the talk. He has all the colloquials. He is a Galilean. And Peter said to him, man, I do not know what you are talking about. And at that moment, when he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. And the Lord turned and looked straight at Peter. Peter remembered the word of the Lord. And how he said to them, before the rooster crows today, you will deny me three times. And he went outside and he wept bitterly. And again, this weeping bitterly, this is not light tears. This is not the I feel guilty tears. I was caught in a trend and doing something bad tears. All you parents know exactly that kind of tears I'm talking about. Not necessarily crocodile tears, but just this light level note. Peter is weeping bitterly. He is grieving. He is mourning because he sees that he has left the friend category and has gone backwards. So far back beyond fan, has become enemy. No better than the Pharisees and Sadducees and those who are bringing false testimony before Jesus in the next house over. He's no better, if not worse. Because the person he stood and said, I will go with you to the end, he is now denied and is ran away from. But family and love and that kind of relationship can really change a whole lot of things. Family is those who know us the most intimately, who know our hearts, who know our minds. And Jesus comes back at the very end in John's account, in John chapter 21, in verses 15 through 19, and shows Peter, you are my family. Remember what I said back in Mark chapter 3. Family is those who are around me, who study with me, who spend their time with me, who are devoted to me and to the Lord. In John chapter 21, in verse 15, and when they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than those do? And he replied, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he told him, feed my lambs. Jesus said a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And he replies, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he told him, shepherd my sheep. Jesus said a third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter was distressed that Jesus asked him a third time, do you love me? And he said, Lord, you know everything, and you know that I love you. And Jesus replied, feed my sheep. And I tell you the solemn truth, when you were young, You tied your clothes around you and went wherever you wanted. But when you were old, you will stretch out your hands and others will tie you up and bring you where you do not want to go." Now Jesus said this to indicate certainly what kind of death Peter was going to glorify God. And after he said this, Jesus told Peter, "Follow me." You see Jesus bringing the relationship back, past, and all the way to family. To the point of showing and making Peter just bring the relationship back to where it was supposed to be, where it was headed to, back on track, to the next level. "Do you love me?" "Yes, you know I love you. I'm here, I'm seeking you out." Peter, one of the only two disciples who ran to the tomb, outpaced by John, but ran to see, ran hoping that he would have a chance to rectify the relationship, to stop being enemy and become at least friend again. But Jesus takes it further and says, "You're now family again. You're now one that I love and I'm giving commands and directions to. You are going to do great things, Peter. Welcome into my family, those who are tied with me." So how am I to Jesus? What am I? Who am I to Jesus? When I look at these categories of fan, what is a fan of Jesus? Is it someone who says, "You know, well, I believe in Jesus and God, but I don't think I necessarily need to go to church. I'll go on the high days, the special days, the holy days. But otherwise, I'm good at having this relationship between the Lord and me. We have our own deal going on. He knows my heart. It's okay. You know, it's not the kind of relationship that I see Jesus pushing and saying that's the relationship that he wants and is seeking. And even in this idea of fan, of a devoted fan, is that the kind of relationship that Jesus is seeking? Is he seeking the relationship of the 72? When only 12 out of that remained as his close confidants? Of the thousands and thousands that followed him around for who knows how long? And when the end came, only 120 were found together, worshiping. Thousands down to 120. Is that the kind of people Jesus is hoping and seeking that we'll be? A devoted fan? What about a friend? What about a friend? Is Jesus seeking our relationship? Is he looking to me to be a friend of his? Well, we know him on a maybe below a surface level. I know, you know, his more intimate details. I know more about the relationship. Maybe his favorite things, the things he's going to say and talk about. We'll try to keep each other in check. That I can rely on him, but I can still do my own thing as well. In the same time, we don't have to be together all of the time. Is that the kind of relationship he is seeking? Is he seeking disciples? Is he seeking a step beyond? Well, disciple is student. It is follower. It is devotee. But that still, I don't think, gives us the actual definition of who I'm supposed to be to Jesus. I believe he's wanting friend, family, disciples, all in one package. He is wanting those who come together. And we see in Luke chapter 14, in verses 25 through 33, this is the kind of people he is seeking out of friend, out of family, out of disciples. Luke 14, in verses 25 through 33. "Now large crowds were accompanying him and turned to him and said, 'If anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry his own cross and follow me cannot be my disciple.' For which of you wanting to build a tower doesn't sit down first and compute the cost to see if he has enough money to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation, is not able to finish the tower at all. And all will see it begin to make fun of him. They'll say man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king goes out to confront another king in battle and will not sit down first and determine whether he's able with 10,000 to oppose the one coming at him with 20,000? If he cannot succeed, he will send a representative while the other is still a long way off and ask for terms of peace. In the same way, therefore, not one of you can be my disciple if he does not renounce all of his possessions. That is the relationship he is seeking. That is the deep level of relationship he's seeking. He's not obviously calling out and saying, literally, I want you to hate your father and mother and brothers and children. I'm not saying, and he's not saying, that you're going to hate them on the level of utter despisement. But the love and devotion and your life focus is going to be so much on me that it's going to seem like you hate them all. That they have to become secondary in this walk. But you still need to be walking along with them and bringing them with you. Because if you leave them behind, it's like you haven't finished the project. If you leave them behind, it's like you've gone to war without the army. He wants us all to come together. Who am I to Jesus? My fan, friend, disciple, family. I hope we're the last group. If you're anywhere on that list, there needs to be some growth to get up to where you're at the point of where you can call him brother and Lord and King. But if you're not in that family group, there's really only one other place you can be. You're either going to be family or you're going to be enemy. In Matthew chapter 7. He says, "Watch out for false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inward are voracious wolves. You'll recognize them by their fruit. For grapes are not gathered from thorns or figs or from thistles, are they? In the same way, every good tree bears good fruit, but the bad trees bear bad fruit. A good tree is not able to bear bad fruit, nor a bad tree able to bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit must be cut down and thrown into the fire. So then you will recognize them by their fruits. And not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter into the kingdom of heaven. Only the one who does the will of my Father in heaven. On that day, many will say to me, 'Lord, Lord, didn't we prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many powerful deeds in your name?' And I'll declare to them, 'I never knew you. Go away from me, you lawbreakers.'" I can be as much of a fair-weather devoted fan of Jesus if I want to be. Going and saying, "Lord, I did all of these things in your name. I knew you. I knew the things that you're teaching and sharing. I was going out and doing what I could. I maybe was even a friend of yours, thinking I had this deep relationship, but still kind of set aside because I still wanted to do my own thing on my own manner. I just wasn't quite ready to devote myself fully to you as a family member does. As someone close and special to Jesus, who calls him brother, who calls his father, father, and who they together call child, my beloved child. If you are not called within the family, he's going to say, 'I never knew you. Go away, you who do not know me.'" I hope and I pray that each one of us here can go and say, "You are my brother and my Lord." And he looks to me and says, "Brother." And if you need to make your relationship right with the Lord in that manner, till He calls you brother, we give you this chance now as we stand and as we sing.